Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for December 18th, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, Archer Daniels Midland Company is moving its global headquarters to Chicago. We'll have that and other stories. Illinois Public Radio's Peter Gray reports on the lingering effect of the 2012 drought on an industry you might not have thought much about. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Today's program is made possible with support from Wesley Evening Food Pantry, providing groceries, health, education, and human services for area residents during the evening of the third Thursday of every month. Wesley Evening Food Pantry is a proud member of Community Shares of Illinois, a choice for payroll donations at work, on the web at cs-il.org.
Let's see how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Hard red winter wheat for May, 656 and a half, down 7 1/4. July, 657, down 6 1/2. Soft May wheat, 619 1/4, down 6 3/4. July, 622 1/4, down 5 1/4. March corn, 425, down 1 3/4. July, 440 1/2, down 1 1/2. January soybeans, 1324, down 22 1/2. July, 1287, down 16 1/4. January soybean meal, 441.20, down 680. January soybean oil, 3906, down 25. December live cattle, 131.07 1/2, down 67 1/2. January feeder cattle, 166.45, they were down 70. And February lean hogs, 86.40, up 75. And those are today's settlements for this Tuesday afternoon.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says dry weather is still expected in central and northeastern Argentina through the coming week. Temperatures will continue warm to hot in Argentina through the coming week to 10 days, with daily highs in the 90s and extremes to slightly over 100 degrees. Topsoil moisture in Argentina is becoming very short from northern Cordoba into Santa Fe and areas northward, and the decline will continue. Meanwhile, Brazil weather over the coming week will include net drying in the south, from Rio Grande do Sul through Paraguay to Paraná and parts of Mato Grosso do Sul through Monday. A generalized rain and snow event will impact the U.S. beginning in the southern plains and delta Friday into Saturday before intensifying and spreading northeast all through the lower and eastern Midwest. And an outbreak of severe thunderstorms may occur in a part of the U.S. Delta, Tennessee River Basin, and lower eastern Midwest this weekend.
For more protection against bad weather hitting your crops, Hendricks Insurance Services offers Total Weather Insurance, a full season program designed to pay out automatically when bad weather hits. Learn more from Luke Hendricks at Hendricks Insurance Services at 815-844-6729 or 815-383-6209.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
We begin our discussion this afternoon with this, and that is the Federal Reserve has decided to reduce its stimulus for the U.S. economy because it says the job market has shown steady improvement. The Fed is going to trim its bond purchases by $10 billion starting in January. What are the implications to the grains markets from this?
A couple other things, too. 9-1 in favor of this taper, Dave. So most of the Fed is definitely on track with this and agreeing on this. And also they're going to continue the taper into late 2014, predicated, and this is where it goes back to the grain markets and the commodity markets in general, I think, is the taper is going to continue predicated on inflation meeting their target 2% level in relatively the early part of 2014. So in other words, they made a note in their text, and also Bernanke during his live press conference, which is still going on, that inflation is more than just a little bit of a concern still, and if they don't get that target of 2% met, or they don't see it getting met as we get into 2014 and deeper into the first, second quarter, they will take action. And those were, quote-unquote, we will take action from Bernanke himself. So the market, I think, is reacting as this is a bit inflationary, and that's quite a surprise to the market, I think, in general. Not only did we see the dollar weaken, we've seen the S&P go up to new highs. We've actually seen the gold go up as well, and we've also seen the euro currency rally along with the dollar getting weaker. Crude oil, like I said, is up as well. So all of those short-term factors and post-Fed decision factors and market reaction would say inflationary, which is more supportive of the commodities and the grains in general. So if you're looking for a reason why the beans fell off to new lows on the close, I don't think you can put it at the feet of the outside market.
I don't either, but it is interesting that we did get a key hook reversal lower in soybeans. I know at this time of year it's hard to read technicals for what they are. They're very flaky, but it is concerning.
Yeah, it is. And you did see the meal fall back below its August and September highs in the lead month, and that's been our bull run. You know, the meal has been the big leader to the upside. I think two things. You did not break the July Nov bean spread down. You closed it around 127. Minor support's at 125. Key support for me is at 120 even. You close below that on a weekly basis, then you start to worry that you've lost your meal market and your meal bull market, and you need the weather then to support the bull spread. I think the second thing, and more the short term, or just as quick in terms of the market reaction, is how do the Asian equities do? Do we go back to a trade where the market goes up in the United States equities and the emerging markets and Asian equities go lower? If we see Asian equities go higher with the U.S. markets, that's going to be, I think, a sign that the BRIC emerging market economies are not going to be negatively affected by this taper. That's been one of the biggest concerns. Once the taper starts, how much of it's factored into the emerging markets, because they have seen, you know, drops in their equities and drops in their currencies. Now that we've actually got the fact with the rumor passed, do we see the equities in the Asian markets bounce like we're seeing today here in the U.S.?
So on the balance of the week and into the new year, does January soybeans hold 1307?
The spread in the Asian equities, I think, will tell you that, Dave. And like we talked about this morning, the weather is still a major factor. And, in fact, if you tried to lay the weather at the feet of why we made new lows in the beans, I don't think you could do that either,
nope.
Especially with the weakening of the spread, because we actually got drier in southern Brazil and Argentina and a bit warmer in Argentina as well. So I want to say this is mainly technical. The EFG guys up in Chicago did note some of their commercial grain clients talking about some soy meal issues with just a little bit more of a flat market going into the holidays, and the meal guys, traders not really wanting to chase the market. That's something to watch, but I don't really sink my teeth into it quite yet.
Let's turn our attention then to the corn market, where, again, we've tried to make a summit on the 25-day moving average, which is currently 430-ish, and we just almost get there and we fall back.
New 18-month lows in wheat, pretty easy to explain that the corn had no help, and when the beans rolled over, I think you probably saw, as a response to the Informa acreage numbers, maybe we saw a market that decided to sell out of some front-end beans and buy back some front-end corn because the new crop bean acres were not as big as expected, I don't think, by the trade. I think they only went up something like 100,000 acres. And if that's the case, then you're talking about something that would probably make the trade think, okay, maybe we should keep the premium in the back end a little bit better and go ahead and take out the front end. And I think you did that in the bean spread, and you probably ignited some of the bean-corn spread unwinding with that too. So corn actually looked better, but it had no upside to it because it didn't have any help from beans or wheat.
When you looked at the Informa numbers, did anything jump out at you?
You know, well, the biggest thing that jumped out at me, Dave, and goes back to what we talked about this morning, is that I don't know if the bean acres are really only going to go up that little bit versus the previous estimate. What I am hearing from clients is we did get the winter wheat planted. There weren't enough corn and bean harvest delays to prevent wheat from getting in the ground, and that was a big key to Informa's numbers, is winter wheat acres went down, and it looked like they got pushed into more bean and more corn acres. The second thing is that, if anything, over the last month, the traders and the farmers in this grain market right now are assuming bigger bean acres and little less corn acres, and I got a couple calls from clients in Indiana talking about the exact same thing today. As we discuss the Informa acreage. So the trend of seeing a smaller increase in bean acres and a bigger increase in corn acres that Informa put out today, I can't agree with based upon the anecdotal client evidence I'm getting feedback from.
And for context, Informa estimated U.S. 14 corn acres near 91.8, the soybean acres at 81.9, and all wheat at 57.9. Before we let you go, what do you think hedgers or marketers ought to do off of what we've done thus far this week?
I think this morning's conversation was very useful to the hedger, Dave. I think you're at a point now with the beans still in the new crop trading around 1160 to 1170, that if you are going to break the spread down and you're going to have to rely upon the weather more and you're going to have to rely upon the Chinese holding to all these bean purchases, you may want to start looking at the new crop hedges here, especially if you're going towards more bean acres, and that's the key. If you're rotating out of corn into beans and you're breaking rotation, I can't see a good reason why not to get those hedges covered right away if you're going to take that kind of production risk.
Thank you much, Mike.
Thanks, Dave. Talk to you Friday.
You too. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. In agricultural news, Archer Daniels Midland Company says that it has picked Chicago to be the site of its new global headquarters. The company's North American headquarters will remain in Decatur. ADM picked Chicago even though Illinois lawmakers did not pass a sought after-tax incentive package. ADM wanted up to $30 million in tax breaks to keep the global headquarters in Illinois. The Illinois Senate and a House committee approved the deal during a special legislation session earlier this month, but the House adjourned without voting on the measure. ADM originally said about 100 employees would be located at the new global headquarters and that a technology center with about 100 additional jobs would open at the site as well. Instead, the company will relocate 60 to 70 employees from its current global headquarters in Decatur, less than half the number of jobs ADM originally planned to create in the new location, and no longer promises to build a technology center. Lawmakers who are crafting a new five-year farm bill are discussing a reduction in food stamp funding of roughly $8 billion over 10 years. A number of lawmakers have warned that $8 billion in food stamp cuts may not be embraced warmly by some on either side of the aisle. The bill that passed the Republican-controlled House cut nearly $40 billion from nutrition programs, while the one that passed the Democratic-controlled Senate would reduce food stamp funding by about $4 billion. Negotiators are circling around the idea of increasing the level of federal heating assistance required to trigger higher food stamp benefits in certain circumstances. In the proposal under discussion, a household would have to receive at least $20 in annual payments through a federal energy assistance program to qualify for a utility allowance, which, when deducted from a household's income, can result in a larger food stamp benefit. A lawyer for ABC is asking a judge to throw out a defamation suit over its coverage of a meat product called lean, finely textured beef. Beef Products Incorporated in South Dakota sued ABC and ABC News Incorporated last year over the network's reports about the product critics have dubbed pink slime. The Dakota Dunes-based meat processor claims the network damaged the company by misleading consumers into believing the product is unhealthy and unsafe. BPI is seeking a $1.2 billion payment in damages. A circuit judge heard arguments on Tuesday afternoon. ABC attorney Kevin Blaine says the network, in each of its broadcasts, stated that the Food and Drug Administration deemed the product safe to eat. But BPI attorney Eric Conley says that those statements were coupled with negative context. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Maybe you did not notice the last time you purchased popcorn at the movie theater or warmed up some in the microwave, but the retailers that brought it to you took a big hit from the 2012 drought. The drought caused one of the worst popcorn harvests in recent memory. Crops not irrigated were decimated, and low supplies have forced local candy shops and movie theaters to pay high prices. Illinois Public Radio's Peter Gray reports.
On a cloud of jolly holiday jingles, the intoxicating aromas of hot caramel, butter, and sugar float out the doors of Dell's popcorn shops, luring in shoppers. The fancy kettle corn varieties sold at four stores in Decatur and Springfield are go-to gifts for holiday shoppers in central Illinois. Kemper Wilcutt, who runs the downtown Decatur shop, is counting on this seasonal rush to make up for a tight year. To make these crunchy confections, you need costly ingredients, and Wilcutt has watched the price of post-drought popcorn skyrocket. He was hoping that by now, with the 2013 crop out of the fields, he would be out of the woods.
It's up as much as $10 a bag right now for us. And this time of year, that's a big hit because we go through a lot of popcorn right now.
Movie theater chains and grocery stores alike have experienced the economic ripple effect of the 2012 drought. Industry analysts say it was a rough year all around. Farmer Randy Fornault did better than most in 2012. He grows 1,600 acres in the Havana area for Weaver Popcorn Company, one of the biggest in the country. Even planting in the rich irrigated soil near the Illinois River, the severity of the drought took a toll.
Under irrigation, it took a lot of water, a lot of energy cost to produce that crop, probably more so than what we've ever had in recent years. What wasn't irrigated, there just basically was nothing there. So it was a trying year.
What corn did come out of Illinois fields in 2012 fetched record prices, and popcorn was no different. It's still working its way through the industry pipeline, from the field to the wholesaler to retailers. Mike Jacobs of Decatur is a farmer and a popcorn retailer. His sister, Lou Ann, bought Dell's popcorn in the late 1970s. Their dad grew corn. The family popped locally. Mike Jacobs says that's tough to do these days. Consolidation in the industry makes it hard to get back into the business, but he's considering it.
Well, I can tell you, if the price doesn't come down, I'll probably be ordering some seed and try to plant my own acres. And right now, I think I'm feeling a little bit like I'm being robbed by the popcorn companies, but it isn't all their fault. The drought caused it.
Weaver Popcorn's Illinois production manager Dan Seaford acknowledges his company is holding the line on price, but that's because his customers are desperate for the product and willing to pay. It's simply supply and demand.
If there's a shortage of that product in the marketplace, you know, we don't have the pounds to sell, or we have to ration the pounds that we are selling. You know, the government's not in the popcorn business, so there's just not warehouses of popcorn sitting around the countryside.
Out there in the warehouse, I have a huge...
Back in Decatur, Kemper Wilcutt shows me around his expanded popping facility, where next spring he'll start bagging popcorn to distribute to stores nationwide. But today he's got his hands full with hundreds of holiday gift basket orders for companies around the area, including Caterpillar. This is crunch time for local businesses like these, which rely so heavily on sales of seasonal treats. If your favorite flavors are butter, caramel, or cheese, you may want to make a holiday wish for a quick rebound of the popcorn industry. Peter Gray, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public radio stations in the Midwest focusing on farm and food. Find more information at harvestpublicmedia.org. Joining us now with Cash Grain Analysis is Scott Butcher of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Scott.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I would suspect that with the price decrease we saw today, the phones weren't ringing very hard.
Yeah, it's just adding to our holiday lack of activity anyway, where the market's definitely not getting anybody excited.
But on the other hand, I would think that you might be telling clients that after the first of the year, a lot of grain might be coming in January for January delivery. And it might be advantageous to take advantage of a basis play between now and the end of the year.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're, encouraging folks to, be proactive and, be looking at prices where they are now. Obviously no one knows what things are going to be, a month from now. But, it feels like, doing something rather than nothing is, definitely a good idea.
Although I would think that producers, have they over your way, those who haven't marketed very heavily begun to come to the reality and readjusting their thought process that $5.50 corn is going to be hard to come by, $5 corn might be possible in the right circumstances, but it's likely to be something less.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think most folks are, starting to come around that, we're kind of, this is the new area that we're in. I mean, it's, going to be like this probably until the springtime when we start talking about acres and weather and, some of those other types of issues.
Have any producers come by and started talking about marketing of 14 soybeans with you guys yet?
Yeah, we have, definitely had good interest. It feels like we're going to see more bean acres planted next year, so that's definitely one thing that, a lot of folks are talking about is just, selling beans for next year seems like to be a good idea.
And go ahead and tell us what your prices are today then, please.
Tonight for cash corn, we're $4.20, soybeans $13.24.
Thank you very much, Scott. You have
Thanks,
a great Dave. Holiday.
You too.
That's Scott Butcher of the Andersons, and he is over in Clymers, Indiana. In about 2 minutes, I'll be back to discuss agricultural weather with World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. It's National Roast Suckling Pig Day. A suckling pig is a young pig that has only been fed on its mother's milk. Traditionally, the dish is roasted and the skin is valued for pork rinds. On this day in agricultural history in 1787, New Jersey became the third state to enter the United States. New Jersey's many truck farms, orchards, and flower gardens give the state its nickname, the Garden State. In 1865, slavery was abolished in the United States.
The 13th Amendment proclaimed neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, save as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist in the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. At the time of its ratification, slavery remained legal only in Delaware, Kentucky, and Missouri. By the way, Illinois was the first state of the Union to ratify the amendment, passing it on February 1st of 1865. Also in 1865, the first U.S. cattle importation law was passed, and in 1991, the International Project to Save the Brazilian Rainforest was launched. The controversial initiative attempted to stem new logging and ranching in the Amazon. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report, this is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
It has been a very strange December for the Corn Belt. Very cold, in fact, below average temperatures in many locations, if you go back historically. And then, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you get severe thunderstorms.
Yeah, it definitely has been strange. And you know what? Those severe thunderstorms that we're expecting coming up here this weekend could be impressive. We've got quite a temperature contrast that's going to be setting up across the Midwest, with temperatures in the 60s occurring in the lower, or we'll call it the middle Ohio River Basin, I suppose, as we get into the latter part of this week. Tomorrow, not necessarily, but on Friday we probably will. And then a very strong cold front comes into the Midwest from the west, and we'll likely see temperatures only in the teens and 20s in the western Corn Belt. So a very strong temperature gradient across the Midwest sets the stage for some severe weather. And we'll also have a strong jet stream going right up through the heart of the Midwest, and plenty of moisture coming up from the Gulf of Mexico and dry air behind it. So it's a very classic setup for some severe thunderstorms, and we will see heavy rain, maybe some 1 to 3 and local 4-inch amounts taking place across the region from the lower Mississippi River Basin into the middle Ohio. So it's going to be a rather stormy weekend coming up.
Does this trend continue into next year?
It does, actually. The weather pattern is going to be pretty much stuck in this mode for a while, and we will see a lot of storminess, a lot of precipitation in the eastern part of the country while it stays relatively dry in the plains and western Corn Belt.
Let's turn our attention to South America, where a story about dryness is now brewing in Argentina.
Yeah, Argentina has come full circle. If you recall, from June through October, it was just terribly dry in Argentina. It had all kinds of problems with the wheat crop developing normally, and some of the early corn and sunseed not doing very well. Then November rolls around, we have perfect conditions, and the crops all got better. We got into the fields and got them all planted, but now all of a sudden we've switched again back into a dry weather mode. A ridge of high pressure has been promoting very little precipitation and very warm to hot temperatures this week. Temperatures in the upper 90s to around 100 degrees occurring daily last 2 or 3 days, and we're going to see that continue through the coming weekend in Argentina with very little rain except in the far southwest. And then next week we'll try to break the ridge down. We'll see how well we succeed at that. We should see at least a little bit of relief, scattered showers and thunderstorms, and temperatures that are a little bit more seasonable. But only for a few days, I think we'll probably go back into this mode here in early January.
And will that trend continue? Is it enough to get the attention finally of traders?
I think it will in Argentina, but not necessarily in Brazil. I think Brazil is probably going to have a rather minor impact from this weather anomaly. So Argentina will have some issues to deal with, maybe a little loss in yield. We'll see how well we do in January as we get closer to reproduction.
Thanks, Drew.
Have a great afternoon.
That's Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report.
Remember, you can subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter. Go to our website at willag.org and click on the subscribe link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.